This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance to explore a unique story today in Goshen County, Wyoming, where the wide open spaces bring to mind that old classic, Home on the Range. Home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance to explore a unique story today in Goshen County, Wyoming, where the wide open spaces bring to mind that old classic, Home on the Range. Home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. That, of course, is the unofficial anthem of the American West. It actually became the state song of John Sussex's native Kansas after World War II. But his post-war life in Wyoming made me think of a different song we're going to sample in a moment. It never ceases to amaze me how many remarkable individual stories are out there, often buried inside the memories of humble heroes who never sought any attention for what they went through. They were all part of a monumental effort to turn back the tide of tyranny during World War II, when 16 million Americans put on those military uniforms and risked their lives. While that was happening around the globe, so many more went all in on the home front, and there's so much that we can learn today from the different textures on this historic tapestry, the unity, the resolve, the collective determination in the big picture, and the jaw-dropping details when we zero in on the personal experiences of these folks who at the time were very young but courageous Americans who we have the privilege of meeting all over this country. If we're ever foolish enough to think we've heard it all we have to do is wait a while, and more of these captivating and inspiring stories will remind us we'll never hear it all. And I've got to say, just on a personal level of transparency here, sometimes I can settle into a routine, a formula, an expectation of the general trajectory of what the veterans we meet here are going to have to say. Maybe you do that too, as a listener. But then along comes a flurry of jarring reminders that the power and the intrigue and diversity of the untold stories still probably outweighs what we have heard. I think you're going to feel that as we hear the rest of John Sussex's survival story today, as we move on next week to a man in a small Colorado town who survived some incredibly close calls in the Navy in World War II and continues to contribute in ways that I think will really move you. And then when we begin Black History Month in February with a Renaissance man in California who rose above some of the worst possible examples of discrimination to become a pioneering heart surgeon. Just preparing for those programs has energized and encouraged me, and I can't wait to share those stories with you, but we've waited long enough to dive back into John Sussex's story. For more than 60 years now, he's lived in LaGrange, Wyoming, right along the old Texas cattle trail. In fact, and I promise I'm not making this up, on my way to his home, we hit the kind of traffic jam you're never going to find in most of the places where we meet our hometown heroes. There was a herd of cattle covering both lanes of the snow-lined road as they moseyed toward lower elevation with two cowboys on horseback showing them the way. It made me think of the life that John Sussex lived after surviving his harrowing ordeal in World War II, and it also made me think of a song that I've got to warn you might stick in your head a little bit. It might as well have been written about our guest today. Take a listen.
Well, he's up at the crack of dawn, cinching that saddle on. Storming hard and things are looking mighty grim. There's a long ride ahead that day, chopping ice and beating hay. Cause he knows every critter's life depends on him. Cowboy, great American cowboy. Big high boots, Stetson hat and a leather vest. And a rope and a gun, he tamed the West. Well, he's up at the crack of dawn, putting that bacon on. Winter is past and the skies are clear and blue. There's springtime everywhere, and the dogies are a-bollockin' there. And he's thanking the Lord once more for a-seein' them through. Cowboy! Best cowboy, great American cowboy, with a
with a horse and a rope and a gun, he tamed the west.
Told you it was catchy. I'm kind of tempted to let it just keep on going. That's written by one of my personal heroes, Jack Hanna, the Sons of the San Joaquin there, singing Great American Cowboy, because we're meeting a great American cowboy today. That is no exaggeration when it comes to John Sussex. John just lost his wife of 68 years, Juanita, in December. But in 2016, John and Neets, as everyone knew her in Wyoming, were inducted together into the Wyoming Cowboy Hall of Fame. That never would have happened. In fact, he never would have even met his wife if he hadn't survived what I think most of us would describe as a terrifying situation during World War II. We're going to peel back a little more of the broad scope of this story in a bit, but you heard him refer to floating 7 days in the Indian Ocean after the ship that 175 men and almost twice that many mules were taking toward India was torpedoed and sunk by a German submarine. You know, you're sitting here with a smile on your face and saying all this like it's no big deal, and everybody else is saying, how in the world do you handle a situation like that as a teenager? You really weren't scared at all?
No, I don't remember being afraid. You've got a job to do. You keep your mind on what you have to do and get her done. That's just that simple. The guys that got afraid will get you killed. They screw things up.
So you have those two 8x8 wooden rafts tied together. You said 17 men total on the two of them. Were any of those guys wounded at all, injured?
No, one guy died, and they finally had to slide him off and into the water because we floated out there for 7 days and nights.
Well, that's what I was going to get to, because we're just hearing 10:30 at night, that first night, and you don't know what's going to happen. You probably don't have any idea really where you are. Did you know where you were?
No, didn't even worry about it. You just take care of the things that you had to do, and the guys that was afraid, are the guys that would get you into trouble.
Did you sleep that night on the raft?
I never stayed awake to see.
Well, the reason I ask is I'm imagining you go through that. It's a nightmare. I mean, it's nothing anyone could imagine, nothing that anything can prepare you for. And then in the morning when you wake up, you're probably wishing it was a dream, but it's not. And then you can finally see, because the sun's out. What did you see when you woke up that next morning?
Water. A lot of it. You couldn't see a horizon anywhere. The only thing you could see, as far as you could see, was water.
Was it, were the waves choppy? Was it a calm sea?
There were swells, and if you was in a trough, you'd look up and you could see the water up above you. Then that swell would move and you'd be on top of it and you could see the horizon all the way around. That was just that simple, you know. You couldn't see land anywhere.
You can't see land. You don't know where you are. You don't know if there are Japanese in the area. You don't know probably if any Americans know that you guys were even sunk, right?
I guess so. What you do is don't worry about it. Just do what you have to do to keep it going, that's all.
Well, and that's the question. What do you do? You've got 17 guys there. Were you guys talking to each other? Was everybody quiet? What was happening there?
We didn't have any food. We had a little bit of K rations and some canned water. And we didn't just tip them water cans up and drink all we could hold. It finally got to where that water didn't hardly get past our mouth to swallow it. Our mouth was pretty dry. But we kind of nursed it along so we'd have it as long as we could, you know.
Well, and you can look back now and you know it was 7 days. But at the time, you have no idea how long this is going to be or who's going to pick you up or if you're ever going to see your family again, if you're ever going to see America again. What kind of stuff went through your mind while you were out there?
We never thought about that. After 5 days, a plane flew over and circled and found us. And when they left, they fired two shots. And 2 days later, a Coast Guard cutter come out of Australia and picked us up. Just that simple.
Those had to be the longest 2 days of your life.
Never thought about it. We just floated around till somebody come along and picked us up. And
did you already know all those guys? Did you get to know them during that time?
Oh, yeah. You're sitting on two rafts, 8x8-foot rafts tied together. You get to know them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one buddy of yours you had been really good friends with, was it Fraley? Was that his name?
Yeah. Yeah, we got out of there to get, we all got out of there all right, yeah.
Well, tell me about him. What was his story? Who was he? What was he like?
He was just about like me. He just took it as it come. I never did see him get excited, neither. There wasn't no use in getting all shook up, but he just had to handle things as they come down the trail, I guess. And that's the way he was, too.
Did you see anything in the water? I mean, would you see any sea life, any sharks, anything else?
Yeah, we did. Even tried to catch a fish. I think I made a fishing hook out of a pin that had a life light tied onto a vest, you know. And I did catch a fish, and he looked like he was about 18 inches long, and then my stupid pin straightened out, and he got away. If he hadn't, we'd have probably ate him. So he lived because he got that pin straightened out and let him go.
Well, maybe that's a metaphor, because you were kind of like that fish, weren't you?
Yeah, I guess so.
You said you had a few K rations and some cans of water. How long did that hold out? When did you run out of that?
We didn't run out because we rationed ourselves. And then they finally found us, and a plane flew over, and after 5 days, and when they left, they circled and flew over us. They fired two shots. 2 days later, a Coast Guard cutter come and picked us up.
You mentioned one of the guys, one of those 17, did die before you guys were rescued. What happened to him?
Well, he wasn't on our raft, but they just had to push him off into the water. He'd been wounded, but he didn't make it, and they couldn't keep him on that life raft. You know, he was dead, so they had to push him off and get rid of him.
I know you keep telling me you weren't afraid and nothing bothered you, but that's got to be hard to see another one of those guys have to suffer that fate.
He wasn't on our raft. He was on one of them other ones. There were 17 of us on our two rafts that we had tied together.
And were there other rafts floating around those two?
Oh, yeah. And when that boat went down, there was mules swimming around. I know one tried to get on the raft with us, and I picked up a piece of tube before. It was about 2 feet long. Tapped him on the head, and he slid off into the water because there wasn't no place for a mule on that raft.
And you said you guys rationed what little food you had and the water you had, but was there some discussion about that? Were there some folks that wanted it more than others? Did someone have to take charge in that situation and lead and keep the other guys from wasting it?
No, everybody worked at it, you know. We didn't have any food to speak of. Some K rations, but them K rations didn't amount to that much. And when we passed that water can around, we'd just take a swallow. We wouldn't just tip it up and drink because there were 17 of us on them two rafts.
Yes, and there were 75 others on other rafts and a lifeboat who were rescued the same day John was. The bulk of the 142 survivors of the SS Peter Sylvester spent a week lost at sea, but believe it or not, 20 more lasted another 2 weeks before being picked up by a British ship. And incredibly, 15 more survivors were able to make it 32 days at sea in a lifeboat before their long-awaited rescue. We'll try to dig even deeper with 91-year-old John Sussex of LaGrange, Wyoming, when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say, I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. Nearly 1,000 veterans have gotten to see their memorials for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.